From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, our connection for this hour was made April 19th in a London train station when an American student found himself trapped in the dark. As alarms blared throughout the tunnel, he rushed to the nearest exit and stood with other travelers for nearly 30 minutes before learning what was the problem. It was an electrical fire that cut the station's power. No big deal. But for that student in that moment, he was grateful the problem wasn't what he feared, or at least certainly what parents tend to fear for students who travel abroad. Things like terrorism. Well, the number of American students studying abroad has more than doubled in the last 15 years. In fact, Forbes called millennials the study abroad generation, or first globals. And while the threat of terror attacks is a concern, again, often for older family members, many students say the benefits of studying abroad far outweigh those concerns and might even make the world safer. A study abroad director at the University of Pittsburgh recently said, quote, "It is harder to blindly hate someone you've met. It's harder to reject a culture you've experienced firsthand, and moving outside of your native culture can greatly increase your empathy to all others who do the same," end quote. So when students return from their time abroad, how can they apply those global perspectives to their local communities and even career goals and resume building and more? That's the theme of an upcoming conference called Rock Your Global Future at SUNY Geneseo. And we're previewing that conference this hour. Also talking to local students about their experiences abroad and what they're bringing back home with them. I'd like to welcome my guest. Sam Cardamone is the conference organizer. He's Associate Director of Study Abroad and International Programs at SUNY Geneseo. Sam, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for having us.
Heidi Kozareski is a Senior Education Abroad Counselor and Faculty-Led Program Coordinator at the University of Rochester's Center for Education Abroad. It's a mouthful. It's great to have you. Thank you, Heidi.
Thank you for the invitation.
Allison Meyer is a student at SUNY Geneseo. She studied in Greece and Ireland. When?
I studied in Greece the summer of 2015, and I studied in Ireland for a semester the fall of 2016.
It's great to have you. Thank you for being here. And Jacqueline Tran is a student at the University of Rochester who studied abroad in Morocco. When did you study in Morocco?
I studied abroad in Morocco spring of 2017.
All right. So a lot of great experience to talk about here. And, you know, Sam, when we were talking to you earlier this year, the idea came up for talking about reentry, especially for students who have studied abroad. Sometimes you come back and you have these receptions and it's sort of cookies and punch and yeah, it's kind of a social thing. But this is this conference that's coming up at least strikes me as something a little bit more serious and a little more, I don't know if it's academically focused. How would you describe it?
Yeah, the world of study abroad, folks who work in study abroad offices have always been known to be the folks that help students get abroad. And the theme of this conference is really assisting students in the experience of coming back. Some students, for them, it's an emotional transition, returning home, relationships have changed, whether that's with family or with friends or significant other. And for some students, it's a matter of I've been studying the same academic topic for the last 3 years, and my study abroad experience has really put me on a new trajectory. So how to navigate some of those changes, as well as students who are interested in pursuing postgraduate opportunities. We have a number of students who apply for Fulbright scholarships after they graduate, want to work abroad, or want to teach abroad. And all of those learning themes are a part of the conference and have guided us in deciding what sessions to incorporate.
Okay, we'll talk about some of those sessions. I mean, some of the theme includes helping students become global citizens and part of the global economy. And Heidi, are students thinking about those broader issues, you think, before they even go abroad now?
We try to instill that in them before they go abroad, but a lot of times students are so focused on getting their paperwork in order, having their academics lined up, worrying about applying for a visa and so forth, that they don't necessarily think about that along the way. So what we've been trying to do in recent years is to help them think about that. You know, Sam mentioned that a lot of students want to have another overseas experience after they return, whether it's another, you know, doing a master's degree overseas or having a work experience overseas. But there are students who don't. But again, we're trying to help them think about the experiences and the academics that they've pursued while they're overseas, how those can translate into their career goals, their professional goals for their academics or personal goals as well.
I mentioned off the top that when you see surveys about, you know, students and family members who have, you know, parents, uncles, those kind of things, people going abroad, it's usually the older generations who are more nervous and the students who have a little bit more of a reasoned perspective. And what is interesting to me, Heidi, is that in recent years, we've seen more coverage of terrorism than ever before. We have, especially in recent elections, not just here, but in the kinds of elections that have been happening, in particular in parts of Europe, there's some pushback against multiculturalism and against globalism in certain contexts. And yet we see student travel abroad up. And I find that interesting. I'm curious to know what you make of that, you know, that juxtaposition. What do you think?
You alluded to a generational thing, and in fact, it could be a generational thing, if you will. But I think our students on our college campuses are exposed on a daily basis to people literally from all over the world. And they may or may not have had those kinds of interactions in their high schools, in their own home communities. And when they come to university, they see how they get to learn about other people from other countries, just in their day-to-day interactions. And by working with them on projects in the classroom or in student organizations, take it from what you hear in the media, not to bash the media, but take it to a personal level. As you mentioned a little bit earlier, meeting the other and understanding the other puts things into a far greater context. I will say, I'll not quit on this one. I've talked in the past year to fewer parents about their concerns about terrorism overseas than I ever have. Sam, I don't know about you, but given the kinds of things that have happened around the world recently, it surprises me a little bit. So I'm hopeful that that's because students are having good conversations with their parents when they say, Mom, Dad, Grandma, Grandpa, I want to do this. This is why I want to do this. These are the benefits I see. That they're helping parents who might otherwise be nervous or concerned to also understand.
Interesting. Sam, you agree?
Yeah, I think that the rationale, part of it is being young and being invincible, I think, is a piece of it. I remember being 18 years old and thinking that there was nothing that I couldn't do. So I think that there is wisdom that comes with reservation as well, that families and friends who have concerns about students traveling abroad comes from life experience. But I also think that there is a tenacity among university-age students that motivates them to want to get out and experience. And I agree completely with Heidi that it's a bit of exposure as well. You mentioned that the statistics of the number of students choosing to study abroad continues to increase. The statistics of the number of international students coming to our American universities is increasing in the same, actually at a faster rate. So our students are having exposure at the university level to say there are communities out there that I'd like to get to know more and I want to push myself outside of my comfort zone.
In a second, we're going to hear from the students on our panel about why they chose to do this and where they chose to go and then the benefits of it. But I want to make sure you understand what is coming up with Rock Your Global Future. It's Saturday, September 30th from 9:30 to 4:30 at SUNY Geneseo. And Sam, Heidi, who is this aimed at? What do people need to know about what's coming up here in just a couple of weeks?
I'd like to start by correcting one thing.
Oh.
I am one of many conference organizers.
Well, I gave you too much credit.
And my colleagues at all of we have about 11 different Rochester area universities that have been working together for about 9 months on this together, and to all have coalesced around this idea that this is something that we want to prepare for our students. So the audience is Return Study Abroad students. The themes are, as you mentioned, engaging with your local community, how to take that global perspective and engage with we have a big refugee population in the Rochester area, and sometimes it takes a student traveling to another part of the world to realize that there's an international community in your backyard. So we want to emphasize those themes of how to make the global local, as well as how to empower students to realize that they have a number of other avenues that they can pursue following graduation that doesn't necessarily mean straight into a career or straight into graduate school, but can be a number of international opportunities as well.
All right. Information online? Contact information?
Information is online. RockYourGlobalFuture.com, and ROCK is ROC, stylized like the airport code of our great city here.
Rock Your Globe. Everything is ROCK, ROC. So RockYourGlobalFuture.com if you want to learn more about that coming up on the 30th. Jacqueline Tran is a student at the University of Rochester who studied abroad in Morocco. And I asked before the hour began, why did you choose Morocco? And you kind of laughed a little. Why did you laugh?
Because when you're working with the Arab world, it's actually pretty difficult to secure a spot. I'd spoken a lot with Heidi in my study abroad office, and I originally had planned to go to Egypt, actually. But somewhere in November, the University of Rochester was concerned for my safety, so Because of political conflicts that were in the region, in that area, I was relocated and applied to Jordan instead. And then conveniently enough, when I had booked my flight and I applied to my program, ISIS had claimed that they organized an attack in December, which was a police shooting of 10 Jordanian policemen. So I had to relocate again to Morocco. So it wasn't necessarily planned, but at the same time, it was a great experience nonetheless.
Yeah, take me through your process as a student, why you wanted to study somewhere abroad, and you clearly were willing to be sort of rerouted based on need. Did you, at any point, did you think, this is not worth it, I should go home?
At some point, yes, I actually thought it wasn't worth it, but then I also realized that it was 10 days before I could, you know, before the program was going to start in Morocco. I had already, you know, said my goodbyes and kind of left and was ready to just buckle down and get, and go. So I just decided to go for it. And the reason why I had chosen to study abroad in the first place was because I had done an extensive amount of traveling on my own before, on my own to different countries, Nepal, Vietnam, Thailand, Japan. And I, after, you know, traveling so much, I began to realize that I was gaining a lot of experience and really clarifying for myself what I wanted to do with my future. And so when I came back fall of last year, I decided to focus specifically on the Arab region. I wanted to initially do humanitarian rights and working with Syrian refugees and building my Arabic skills to work in the Arabic-speaking region, and so that's why I had chosen this region in the first place.
How is your language?
It's a lot better, definitely a lot better. But Moroccan dialect of Arabic is very different from classical Arabic that you would hear on the news, and also the colloquial Arabic of the Middle Eastern regions, because it was colonized by the French. So you have a lot of French-influenced Arabic, and it's just very, very different. So,
is it difficult to study? You know, you're learning Arabic to begin with, and I remember learning Spanish growing up, and book Spanish, I quickly learned, is very different than Spanish from our friends from Puerto Rico, from Mexico, from Honduras, from Spain. Mm-hmm. And, you know, can you learn Arabic as a basis and then go to Morocco, and then do you think, wait a second here, you know, this is so different? Or can you prepare for that knowing where you're going to end up being?
I think I took a semester of Arabic before I went to Morocco, and it helped me to just be able to read the language and also understand the sentence structures. But once you get there, you have to start from basically point A again, because the dialect is so, so different, and barely anyone uses like book Arabic. And people can understand you, but you will not be able to communicate. Like, you won't be able to understand them, and that's a very important part. You know, you want to hear what the locals have to say. So I actually ended up having to take a colloquial Moroccan dialect class as well.
Hmm. And I'm sorry, remind me again, how long you were in Morocco?
I was in Morocco from January to May. Then I came back to New York for 2 weeks, and then I went back there over the summer.
What is the overall characterization of that experience? When your friends and fellow classmates want to know, really, was it worth it to you? What did you gain from it? Did you enjoy it on a daily and weekly basis? What would you say?
Yeah, actually, it's funny. Many people have asked me, you know, how Morocco was. And it's such, I think for most people that study abroad, there's so many different experiences that you have. You cannot sum it up in one sentence, yeah, or one word. I definitely think my heart beats stronger for that country now. I think that's the best way to put it. Not necessarily that I am totally in love with the place, but there is a familiarity and a comfort that I appreciate. And there are people back there that I have established close relationships with that I'm willing to return to. And I think that experience that I've had there is just, I mean, it's, you know, cheesy enough to say, it was life-changing. And it really steered me in a clearer path than it ever has before. So I'd say it was definitely worth it, and I would never go back.
Jacqueline, I mentioned that comment from a study abroad director at the University of Pittsburgh saying that these programs actually make the world safer. You know, for a moment, set aside our concerns about safety, which are legitimate and important, mm-hmm, but the actual experience of studying abroad makes the world safer. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that, because I think it... there's only so much you can pick up from media. You know, media is basically constructed in a very specific kind of way. And then when, especially when we're dealing with Islamic countries, we only hear what the media wants us to hear. But when you go there for yourself, you really have your own judgment that you can really pick up from yourself and your own experiences, and, you know, come to a conclusion that is not necessarily as skewed from like a higher power. So I think that I think it's more mindful in a way.
Yeah. What were the biggest differences as you saw them in terms of media presentation versus what you were experiencing in Morocco?
Media presentations were, I mean, you know, it's always about violence. Like Islam is violence, you know, and it's only like the biggest attacks that, it's like Islam, ISIS, and Arabs, like that's in violence, and you know they're a threat. It's like kind of like the Cold War and communism all over again, you know. But when you go there, it's, you know, it's some people are Muslim and some people aren't. There are people who drink and smoke, even though they claim to be Muslim. There are, you know, people that are young and youthful and don't wear the hijab and, you know, are creating music and really just living their lives. And they're not so different from us. And I think that's just something that, you know, we have to just humanize them. And I think that if when you go there and you live there for such a long time while simultaneously studying their culture and their religion, and you also see it in person. You see that these people have access to YouTube and Facebook, and it's a globalized society. They're not so different from us after all. But at the same time, they do have their own culture. So I think the biggest thing is that, you know, when you study abroad, it's, you know, people are humanized and people are really just people.
And so, Jacqueline, you've heard Heidi and Sam talk about the importance of this kind of a conference of reentry, not just being sort of a social occasion, but to think about ways to really effectively re-enter, to bring those experiences back with you, to benefit from them. How much have you thought about that? Have there been any challenges for you? You know, how do you view that issue?
After traveling a lot, I think that this conference is extremely important because it's not difficult to leave. It's always more difficult to come back because you don't really know, again, like how to apply the skills that you've learned from this abroad experience into your daily life. And how to adjust back into your own culture. Sorry, what was the question?
Yeah, so I'm curious to know, for your own challenges, what maybe have you experienced having, you know, multiple periods of travel now in your life? Do you come back? Are there consistent challenges? And then what are the benefits that you see coming out of this?
The consistent challenge is basically, how do I talk to the people that, you know, what community am I part of? And, you know, it's almost as if New York, or I'm from New York City, so like in Rochester, so like this place was frozen in time. And then I went somewhere really far away, and I came back, you know, 10 years later. And how can I conceive, and how can I, you know, engage myself with these same people? And I think it's always been hard every single time I've been abroad to come back and really understand how I can adjust myself back into this community. And how I do it and the skills that I've learned is basically to just, you know, realize that and internalize that experience that I had abroad is my own. And it will integrate into how I interact with people in the future. And personally, the way I deal with it is by working towards a goal, right? So if it's my career goal, how is my career goal going to change? How am I going to engage with people in a different way? And how can I use these experiences that I've had abroad to channel my energy towards more productive things? And so I think that it took me a lot of personal effort and time and thinking to do that. And I feel like if this conference was available to me earlier, it would have been such a big help to really like know that from the beginning.
Do you have a career? I mean, everyone's got career goals, but for you, is there an easily defined vision that you have of what you'd like to be doing in 5-10 years?
Yeah, I'd love to be a university professor. And I actually wanted to be, I wanted to work in a humanitarian organization. But I think that, you know, it's a mix of other things, but I think that I'm more suitable to do academia. And in terms of, I think my trips abroad have narrow down my research topic and what I'm going to be interested in and what I should be pursuing as in graduate school and beyond. So,
Do you find yourself having traveled more? And, you know, Jacqueline, I met you in less than an hour ago, but, you know, you're certainly, you know, a very impressive person and a very intelligent person. I imagine your friends are the same way. But I would just ask you, having had these experiences now, once in a while when we encounter Americans who will make sort of generalized statements about other countries, other regions, I find the more the more confident someone is that the rest of the world just wants to come and be American, the less likely it is they've ever traveled outside of America. And that's, again, that's an overgeneralization that may be unfair. But if you encounter those kind of sentiments, do you find yourself using your experience to kind of push back a little? Would you push back? You know, would you engage in those conversations about what people might misunderstand?
Oh, always. And I think that I guess I don't want to keep these experiences to myself. I think for me, it's my the reason why I travel so much is to work on myself more in order to help others or in order to inform other people. You know, not everyone has the opportunity to travel. Some people don't have the economic opportunities to do so. So, you know, or people don't really have exposure to higher education and critical thinking skills. So how can I engage with them? And I wouldn't cast them off to the side. I would actually, you know, try to work with them, especially in this day and age. It's important to have these kinds of crucial conversations and really put theory into practice, put academia into activism. So yeah, I would definitely sit down and try to not necessarily push back, but, you know, question them, make them see the bigger picture.
Jacqueline Tran, a student at the University of Rochester, recently studied in Morocco, and the Rock Your Global Future Lessons from Abroad Rochester Area Study Abroad Returnee Conference is coming up on September 30th, 9:30 to 4:30 at SUNY Geneseo. It's rockyourglobalfuture.com for the website to check out registration, getting involved. Organizers expecting roughly 100 students from multiple universities, schools around our region. And I want to ask Sam and Heidi, having listened to Jacqueline's story and her experiences, what are the different themes that the conference will have that sort of relate to some of what we're hearing here? Sam?
Jacqueline, you're so impressive. let's start with that. The themes are absolutely linked to what Jacqueline was describing in terms of even linking back to her time of not necessarily having a specific program in mind, but it was mostly framed around your learning experience that you were looking to accomplish, and the political changes of things had predicated a different location. But what we frame a lot of this around is personal goals, academic goals, career goals. What do students want to do personally? And for them, for a lot of our students, the themes around the conference related to that is how is this influencing relationships that may have changed back at home? That example that you gave of kind of a frozen in time moment, but you have had a lot of personal growth that takes place. The academic goals, redefining what your research path might be, and talking with students about how do you talk with advisors, how do you engage with the resources that are available at a university to kind of pursue new avenues that you otherwise hadn't been exposed to, and career-wise, really helping a student in a tangible sense say, where on your resume does your study abroad experience go? And if you did an internship with a humanitarian organization abroad, how do you best represent that on a resume, in a cover letter, in an interview? So taking it from the abstract of the personal changes that have taken place to the very concrete of specifically, let's put it right here underneath education.
Okay. Heidi, how about you?
Absolutely. I agree with Sam's comments. As well, helping students, we use the term translate a lot, unpack and translate what they learn. Some of our students going abroad do participate in volunteer experiences or internships. Others don't. But as well, helping students translate, for example, I was in a country where I didn't speak the language. I thought I was getting on a train that was taking me to City X, but when I got off the train, I was in the completely different direction in another country, and I didn't speak that language either. But I got myself together, and I got back to my host city. And helping a student realize, okay, what skills did you learn in that situation, not speaking the language, not even knowing where the heck you were? What resources did you use in order to get yourself back to where you needed to be safely and in a timely manner? And so that's why we are bringing in folks from different career offices at our, on our campuses to help students think about those kinds of things, because sometimes students don't think about them. Okay, I became more proficient in Arabic, or I had an internship in a law office and learned about the legal field. Those are kind of obvious, but it's more, as Sam said, intangible sorts of things, developing those soft skills. And a lot of times, as I said, that's something that not just study abroad students, but other, you know, a lot of our undergraduates have difficulty with, and I think that's going to be a big part of it. I've been in the field for more than 30 years, and back in those days, you know, we assumed that students wanted to go overseas again after having a study abroad experience, whether that was to go to a graduate program or to work abroad. And I think some students still have that interest after their study abroad experience, but a lot don't, which is fine. But again, it's helping them realize the skills that they've gained and put that into a tangible sense.
Listeners, if you want to join the program with your own experiences or questions, it's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Brennan writes to the program and says, I studied abroad in Nairobi, Kenya in the fall of 2015. I gained so much from this experience, but one of the most unexpected and important insights was what it was like to live as a minority, albeit a privileged one. The best experience a student can have. Brennan Thompson writes to us on that note. And we've got also some comments from listeners who are kind of weighing in on how they perceive this generation of students versus previous generations and how they might view travel abroad. We'll get to some of those questions as well coming up. We're also going to talk to Allison Meyer, a student at SUNY Geneseo who studied abroad in Greece and Ireland. And we're talking about more about the conference that's coming up on September 30th. RockYourGlobalFuture.com. We'll come right back to this conversation. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections, City Council in Rochester had a number of new faces running for seats, people who decided to get involved for the first time. They didn't all win. What happens when you make that risk, you take that jump, and it doesn't work out? Do you stay involved? Can you run again? We'll talk to some of those who came close but didn't win. Then in our second hour, what happens when clinicians and doctors get burned out? We'll discuss it. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Allison Meyer is a student at SUNY Geneseo, studied abroad in Greece or Ireland first? Which one was first for you?
Greece was first.
2015.
Yes, the summer of 2015. It was a program that was about 4 weeks long, and it was a one-class program, so I was taking one class that whole time.
And Ireland when?
Ireland was the fall of 2016, and that was a semester at a different college. So I was at Trinity College Dublin.
So when you make those considerations on where you're going to go and if you're going to study abroad at all, what were the factors that weighed in for you, Allison?
I mostly was where I wanted to go and also how I wanted to go. So I did two different programs. I did the Greece was, as I said, just one class, and the Ireland one was a semester, basically being just a student at Trinity College. Actually kind of the opposite of Jacqueline. Before I came to college, the only time I'd ever been outside the country was the Canadian side of Niagara Falls, which is probably the most American you can get without being in America. So I knew coming into college that I wanted to study abroad. I didn't know what major I wanted to be. I didn't know what I was going to do afterward, but I knew I wanted to study abroad. And the class that was offered was a Western humanities class in Greece. So you were reading Plato, you were reading Socrates, you were reading about early Christianity, and you really got to be in a space that made those texts feel very real.
Well, in Greece, of all places, and not Greece, New York here.
So, no.
What do you remember most about preparing for that experience, language-wise, culture-wise? What did you do to make sure that you felt ready for that?
Well, I wanted to make sure that I knew at least a couple things of the language. In Greece, most people speak English, so it wasn't really that necessary, but I was able to learn like a couple words like hello, thank you, those kind of boilerplate words. So I did that. We have pre-departure orientations at Geneseo, so I had that, which covers safety, covers, you know, what you're going to be doing in the class, all of that.
Okay, and in Ireland, I've got some Irish friends. I can understand them most of the time. So you were feeling pretty good about Ireland, or what did you think about getting ready to go to Ireland?
Ireland was a little bit more because it was 4 months rather than 4 weeks.
Yeah.
So even just the logistics of, oh my God, what am I going to pack, you know, for a 4-month stay versus a 4-week stay, and really transferring your life somewhere for part of the year. And so I was thinking about those logistics things, and I was thinking about what I wanted to study while I was there. I am a history major at SUNY Geneseo, and I really wanted to study history in Ireland. So I wanted to make sure that I was going to be a part of history classes there.
And how did you find the experience?
Fantastic. Especially studying history at Trinity College. Trinity College was founded in 1592, so it was actually founded by Queen Elizabeth I, so it's a very old university. It just has a lot of traditions. It's very different from my small rural public college of Geneseo. And Dublin itself is a city that has a lot of history painted on its landscape. Walking to where I would pick up my groceries, I would pass a park called St. Stephen's Green. And there's an arch entryway to that park. And you could actually still see bullet holes that were there from the 1916 Easter Rising, which was one of the events that led to Ireland separating from England. But you could still see those bullet holes. They were still visible.
And so much of what we're hearing from Jacqueline's experience, your experience, it sounds like, I don't know if I'm going to use the right terminology, but experiential learning, more immersion learning, where you are learning about subjects in as much context, sometimes a historical context, as mm-hmm. opposed to you're going to go to another country, but you're going to sit in a classroom for the most part and not really travel much or see much or do much. So in other words, you'll be a student, but then you'll also just sort of be a tourist, and you'll be kind of, it does sound like there was a melding of some of those educational ideas.
Oh, exactly. I think that is one of the fundamental aspects of a study abroad program, is that you're not only in a classroom. What you are doing outside of the classroom, your experiences in the country with the people are very fundamental to your experience in the classroom, and molding those two, I think, is very important to study abroad.
All right, so let's talk about reentry then for you, because you've now traveled the shorter experience, the first one, to mm-hmm. Greece for 4 weeks, mm-hmm. As opposed to 4 months in Ireland. Mm-hmm. What were the biggest challenges for you coming home?
Unpacking. I think, as Jacqueline said, just taking your experience and putting it back into your life, because not much changes in 4 weeks or 4 months usually. So when you come back, you have usually changed, and the place you come back to may not have. So trying to reorient yourself, I think, was one of the difficult things. And as well as being able to unpack that experience and what you learned, because it's very hard to really come to a conclusion about your experience when you're in it. It's only once you're back that you really start to reflect on it and see exactly what you got out of it.
Do you think the world is safer when people travel more from those experiences? Safer, better, a little more connected?
I think it's definitely, when you meet someone in person and when you have conversations like this, it really opens your eyes to how complex situations are. So instead of having one view of something, you can see so many of the views. So you can really expand your view on it.
What do you want to be doing in 5 to 10 years? And how can this benefit you with that?
Well, I'm actually currently applying for a Fulbright scholarship to go back to Ireland and do a master's degree in Dublin. So I would say that my experience in Ireland very much affected me, mm-hmm. because I want to go back and I want to learn again in that country.
And what do you want to be doing in say, a decade from now?
Well, I would be getting a master's degree in archival management, so I would be working in archives and document preservation.
What a fascinating field. That's really great, mm-hmm. and great to have a passion for it. So before I go to some of your phone calls and comments, I'll ask Sam and Heidi the same kind of question. When you have this conference coming up here September 30th, and you hear about Allison's experience, what are some of the themes of the conference that kind of come to mind as she describes her reentry? I thought that was a really wise comment, that the world doesn't change all that much in 4 months, but she maybe has. And then the question is, you know, how do you reassess, and how do you work those in? What do you make of that?
I think just off of the top, we've always joked that, and you both alluded to this, when you come back, somebody will say, oh, how was your time in Greece? How was your time in Morocco? And they keep walking. So they know you were gone, and they know you probably did something cool, and they
may want to hear about it, but they maybe don't really want to hear about it. Your parents, they're sick of it. Your siblings are sick of it. Just at the outset, this conference is going to give our return students an audience to be able to talk about their experiences with other people who understand, other people literally who have been there and have gone through or are still going through the same kinds of emotions and changes. And, oh, my gosh, I thought I was going to become a lawyer, but I had that internship and it was great, but I do not want to become a lawyer. What do I do now? So there are just going to be so many opportunities for casual conversations about these sorts of things, but as well as some of the sessions that we're offering.
Okay, Sam?
And Allison brings a unique perspective in the fact that she did participate in a short-term program and a semester-long program, and those experiences of being away, even just linked to duration, oftentimes warrants a very different response. And one of the things that we always talk about in the world of international education is something that's called the cultural adjustment curve, and kind of the experience of somebody arriving to a new culture, and it's all rose-colored glasses, whereas when you spend an extended duration of time abroad, you really have that opportunity to sink into culture shock a little bit and really reevaluate your place in a new your existence in a new place. So trying to frame the experiences and speaking to students who have been abroad for different durations and how they may be looking at their experience, that if you were abroad for 2 or 3 weeks, it may have all been new and exciting. It's not much more than the duration of a vacation. So trying to encourage students not to romanticize a 2 or 3 week study abroad program as it was all incredible. There are elements that if you go back to that place and live there for a year, you will come to dislike as well. But Allison brings in unique perspective, having fully experienced what is often attributed to a cultural adjustment curve over the course of 4 months.
All right, let me grab some of your comments, and we're going to start with Hal in Dansville on the phone. Go ahead, Hal.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to echo, in my case, some of the things we heard before. When I was a sophomore in college, I was looking for different work experiences since I had previously worked for people that, got boring, basically. So I, through Lufthansa Airlines, I found an opportunity to work for and travel in Germany for 3 months. So I worked in construction for a month and a half and then traveled all about. And this was a long time ago, but I connected with relatives who I've stayed in touch with for decades. And in fact, those relatives had their children visit our farm for 3 summers. And later on, our children, now adult son and daughter, spent 5 weeks bicycling and traveling about rural and urban Germany, which had a huge effect on them. Now both have good professional opportunities after traveling and going to university. So I think that alone made it worthwhile. From my own experience, I went to the University of Manitoba in Canada, and later to Stanford University after living and studying in Tanzania and East Africa. German was pretty easy to pick up because I had studied it for years but was totally unfluent when I was in Germany, but very quickly learned in a construction job when the crane was coming or something. And Swahili was, at least the rural Swahili that I spoke in a national park, was very easy to learn. And all of these experiences have broadened my family and created a circle of interest and friends that have been lifelong. So I really encourage student or just young people to get out of town. So I'll take your comments off the line.
Hal, thank you. There's a lot of different themes there, and I thought of several things that our guests have said when Hal was talking. First of all, he's encouraging as many people as possible to do this, and I think Jacqueline mentioned that not everyone has the means to do this. And I want to ask Sam and Heidi, are we seeing more of an effort to make it as inclusive as possible? I mean, there's some privilege tied to being able to travel abroad, of course, but are we seeing more opportunity for students across income brackets?
I'll start, if I may, Sam.
Yes and no, and I congratulate you and your family, Hal, on the travels that you've been able to do, and really the world of study abroad as we know it is changing from the traditional semester academic year abroad to the short-term kind of program that Allison participated in Greece. But as well, more and more students are looking at things like internships overseas, research opportunities overseas, shorter-term programs, let's say a winter break program that might only be 2 weeks in length. There are scholarships out there, but they tend to be for the longer-term traditional programs. A lot of students find it hard, either financially or sometimes because of academics, to be able to spend that traditional semester or academic year overseas. A lot of shorter-term programs. So we at the University of Rochester, and we're not alone, are looking at trying to find different ways for students who don't have the financial means to be able to fund these sorts of things with scholarships and grants and things like that. And as well, just because a student isn't going for a full semester doesn't mean it's not a valuable experience. The travel that you and your family have done on their own, of course, have been very, very valuable experiences. It doesn't have to be what we thought about as a traditional study abroad experience. And so that's why a lot of us now refer to it not just as study abroad anymore, but as education abroad.
Okay. Sam?
I echo all the sentiments that Heidi offered there. Access is a hallmark of what the whole education abroad field is trying to accomplish, and not making this available to one slice of the demographic of the U.S. Or higher education population in general. Before we headed in here, Jacqueline mentioned that she was a Gilman winner, which is one of those scholarships that makes access more accomplishable, and that's available for any students who are Pell recipients. And one of the big themes where if economic access is a challenge for students, is I encourage our students to examine the opportunities that exist in their backyard, in the sense that if you're on a college campus, have you joined the culture club, the Japanese culture club, and have you engaged with our international student community? If you don't have that academic flexibility, economic flexibility, whatever it happens to be, and if you're just a community member who wants to engage in an international community, Rochester is rich with those opportunities, and a Google search with the right words in there can certainly connect you pretty quickly.
Let me ask our panelists who've traveled, studied abroad recently. Jacqueline, as someone who studied abroad in Morocco, Hal is talking about experiences lasting a lifetime, relationships lasting a lifetime, and then family kind of following those footsteps. Do you envision that for you? Have you built relationships you think that will last there from your trip to Morocco?
Oh, definitely. And something specifically to Morocco, I guess, and Arabs in general, is that once you make a friend, you never really lose them. It's like my friends that I have now, you know, some of them are 25, some of them are like 28, and they still talk to their elementary school friends from like when they were 5 or 6 years old, or a little older. And as an American, that's just, I don't talk to anybody from so long ago. And I think that there is that definitely like a sense of community, and I definitely feel that too. The amount of people that I made, that the friendships that I've made there, even with foreigners who are just also study abroad students, but from Brazil or from France, we still kind of have an experience that we went through together, and that Morocco is a special place for us and in different ways, and it's kind of a solidarity that we can feel like towards each other.
Okay, Allison?
Yeah, I would agree, both with making long-lasting relationships with the people that you were over there with and the people from your home university that you go abroad with. Having that same experience really does connect you, and not just people, but I think ideas that you find over there will last you a lifetime as well.
It's rockyourglobalfuture.com, the upcoming conference for returnees, Saturday, September 30th. All the information online. We're going to work through more of your comments as they come in. We'll go to Maddie in Rochester next. Go ahead, Maddie. Hi, Maddie. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi. I am currently a PhD student, and I'm a mom of three. And when I did my undergrad, I was actually a single mom. And I was accepted into three different study abroad programs, and I was never able to attend a single one because I couldn't bring my daughter. And so I heard you talking about increasing inclusivity for kids who may not be able to afford it and the ways that's addressed. I couldn't hear the whole thing because I want to clean up the kids who are being left. But I just wonder if there's any plans in place or any programs that address the needs of students who are also parents, who really want to be able to go and have these opportunities and experiences, but often can't because of insurance limitations or the fact that the housing that you're put in is often like student dorm housing overseas. And I was just given a million reasons why I couldn't participate as a parent. And I always felt so left out. And I'm so jealous of your panelists that they got to have these experiences. So I was just wondering sort of what the current state of that is and if this is something that's come up often, which is sort of my experience.
So, all right. Thank you, Maddie. I appreciate that phone call. Heidi Kozareski is Senior Education Abroad Counselor and Faculty-Led Program Coordinator at the U of R's Center for Education Abroad. What's the answer there?
That's a very interesting question that you bring up, Maddie. I haven't had that question myself at the University of Rochester for quite a few years. We are still, most of our students really still are traditional college-age students, but this question comes up in our professional organization now and again. Part of the reality of the situation is depending on where a student wants to go, depending on the age of the children, there's the concern about, for example, childcare during the day, or if the child is of school age, getting the child enrolled in a school overseas. Then there are visas, again, depending on the country that a student might want to go to, the visa a parent may not be able to get a visa for the child. So there are some practical and logistical issues that sometimes are out of any of our hands. That said, it requires early planning. So if a student had the means and the desire to really make this happen, the choice of location might be a little bit more limited, again, depending on the age of the child, visa requirements and all that good stuff. But if a student, and it's the same thing I say to a student who's an engineering major or who's doing a double major, the earlier you plan, the more realistic your goals might be. That said, because of the increase in the number of shorter-term programs, let's say 2 to 4 to 6, 8-week programs, sometimes something like that might be a great opportunity for a parent. So those are just a few things off the top of my head. Sam, I don't know if you've had any experience recently.
In fact, as recent as last week, I had this question posed to me. SUNY works as a consortium, so I was, as an employee of SUNY Geneseo, I was at the Buffalo State and University of Buffalo Study Abroad Fairs and actually had this at each of those fairs. Female student there said, I'm a parent. I have one student said, I have two young children. And we had this conversation, and keep doing the good work of being a PhD student with your children. And the challenges, as Heidi outlaid them out, are logistical and reality challenges. However, what the approach that we take at Geneseo, and I think is consistent around the Rochester area, is if there's a will, there's a way. And as long as we can navigate those, we have ethical considerations to operate, and we want to ensure that our students who are participating, we're meeting all of our standards of good practice, as our professional organizations would say. As long as we're meeting all of those, we want to see any student who can make it happen, study abroad to make that happen. And those limitations are going to exist, but that is definitely, as a mobilized group, parents interested in studying abroad has not been a demographic that has raised its voice in the same way that individuals with ability impairments has. And there's an organization called MIUSA that advocates for students with ability impairments to study abroad. But in the same way, parents have not mobilized in that way. So it may be an opportunity to get together and share those concerns and grow the strength through the voices.
An email from a listener named Jane says, I would say fewer millennials have lost their jobs due to globalization than other generations, so that could be part of the difference, as they have lived in a world that works more globally than those previous. But Jane says, I think if careers are lost through outsourcing or globalization in general, those who have lost those careers will have a more negative viewpoint. Jacqueline, you're someone who sees some of the benefits of at least travel, and globalization is different than just study abroad. But Jane is saying, you know, that your generation is going to start to have a more negative viewpoint if job loss happens. What do you think?
I think that globalization actually creates jobs. I don't think it would actually deter you away from job opportunities, because I think once you start to have better awareness of God knows how many people there are in this world and what needs need to be fulfilled and what privileges and, I guess, resources that we have that we can exchange to, I don't know, Zimbabwe or wherever, you start to create opportunities. And I don't think there's never such thing as a stagnant number of jobs out there. And I think that, you know, simply put, the more you expose yourself to more knowledge and more facts and of the reality of this world, the more creative your thinking is going to be and the more things you're going to create. So, you know, I definitely don't agree with what was her name, Jane?
Jane, yeah.
And I think I actually have a more positive view about that.
About 30 seconds, Allison, thoughts on that?
I don't know if I'm really qualified to answer that because, as you said, study abroad is different from globalization as well.
Does globalization worry you at all? Probably not in your field, I would think.
Well, yeah, not really.
Well, I've just learned so much from not only our panelists, and I wish we could have gotten through more calls here. We had others we couldn't get to. But I want to let families especially know you've got a chance coming up here and check out rockyourglobalfuture.com. Sam, some final thoughts, 20 seconds on what they're going to learn on Saturday, September 30th.
This is excellent for any return study abroad students. Come help let us engage you and ask the right questions to unpack that experience both in a physical and emotional, intellectual, academic sense, and introduce students possibly to some avenues that they may not otherwise have known existed.
Sam is one of the many conference organizers and Associate Director of Study Abroad and International Programs at SUNY Geneseo. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Evan.
And Heidi Kozareski from University of Rochester Center for Education Abroad. Thank you so much, Heidi.
Thank you, Evan.
Jacqueline Tran, Allison Meyer, not only sharing their experiences, but I think not surprised to hear that you guys are going to be leaders in our future here. So thank you so much for sharing those experiences. Jacqueline, Allison, good luck to both of you. Our thanks to all the staff here working today. I'm Evan Dawson. Talk to you Tuesday.